Hey, good afternoon, everybody. You've got attuned to CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia. My name is Jasper. We are here situated on the unceded and ancestral Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people, and we broadcast to the entire city of Vancouver, which is itself situated on unceded territory of the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh people. Thanks for listening. The show is called Noise Complaint. I haven't done one in a while, but it's the show where we bring in local artists to talk, to perform, to hang out. And today I'm thrilled to be joined by Sam Davidson, live in studio. Welcome, Sam.
Thanks a lot, Jasper. Thanks for having me.
It's really good to see you. You and I, we've known each other for a while. We've collaborated a little bit. But maybe folks at home might not know who you are. I can give you a little preamble.
Sure.
If you don't know who Sam is, you've likely heard Sam's music if you've listened to artists like Brastronaut, Sam's solo project, Skim Milk. You've heard Sam perform with lots of local artists like Sam Tudor, people like that. But Sam, why don't you tell folks a little bit about who you are?
Okay, yeah. Those are definitely some projects I've worked in over the years. And but me, myself, I'm a clarinetist. I'm a wind synthesist. I'm a music producer, all around wind audio nerd who's been in Vancouver forever. I'm an alumni of UBC.
Yes.
I studied orchestral woodwinds back in the day. I graduated in 2006. And then you know, I floated around in the Canadian indie music scene for a very long time, and namely in Brastronaut and with Jaron Freeman Fox and Sam Tudor, Sam Lynch more recently.
Yeah.
And then I went back and I got my librarian degree from the iSchool here. And now I'm actually a public librarian, but I still cannot let go of this obnoxious music hustle. And so I have this cool project I'm here to talk to you about.
That project is called Unrealistic Spaces. You are bringing it here to campus on November 9th at the Roy Barnett Recital Hall. It was a collaboration between you, the UB, and sorry, I want to get this right. Where are they? The UBC Institute for Computing, Information, and Cognitive Systems?
Yes, and that is a facility we've worked in that's a collaboration between ISICS, as we call it,
cool,
the abbreviation, and the UBC School of Music.
And the UBC School of Music. You have a collaborator from Japan,
mm-hmm,
who we should talk about today, Yujin Honda.
Mm-hmm.
And then another collaborator, Will Howie, a music producer, recording engineer, and resident here at UBC at the School of Music.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about the origins of Unrealistic Spaces.
Okay, yeah, Unrealistic Spaces. It's been a bit of a journey. So my colleague and best friend, Will, who, as you said, is sessional faculty at doing music tech at the UBC School of Music, he was doing postdoc research at Tokyo University of the Arts for a number of years. And kind of on a whim, just before he was about to leave his time there, I was like, okay, Will, I'm coming out. I got to visit my best friend when he's living in a foreign country. So I bopped out there on a plane. And we hung out for a week, and he set up some cool activities up there to sort of, you know, musically partake in. A was like doing a little studio recital of some of my own works. And then another one was he threw together a student ensemble to record like a fusion track.
Cool.
With the iwi. And so that is where we happened upon Eugene, the drummer, who we weren't super familiar with, but we were in like the sound check and we were just hearing this guy play, and our heads just turned and we were like, what is going on?
Wow.
Here? He's so talented. So we cut this really cool track, which hopefully we'll play today. And
yeah.
And then we just had this idea, you know, we wanted to sort of carry forward, you know, the little, you know, this little gestation, this little thing that happened in Tokyo, and sort of craft it into a grant. And as you do when you're an artist, you get the impetus to say, hey, I'm gonna throw my luck at the Canada Council or Factor or one of these arts organizations, and you just take your gamble and you kind of forget you ever did it. And so we wrote this really lofty grant, and then we ended up getting it, and we were kind of like, this is late last year, and we're like, okay, like we got to do it, we got to do this thing. And so Yeah, it's just been kind of putting one foot in front of the other ever since. And so here we've landed at Unrealistic Spaces, as it's called. And it's basically an immersive, it's like a immersive audio research composition project.
Okay.
And so we're able to write a whole bunch of new music in this ISIC space, which has a kind of an immersive sound system. So we've actually spent about 2 weeks there in full since May writing all this new material and testing it in this cool sort of 12 to 14 channel audio environment. Huh. And Roy Barnett Hall has a sort of a mirrored system. So it's easy to sort of map what you do in this space over to the recital hall. So we are, we're going to be adding to the, we're bringing in extra speakers to kind of like amp up the system in Roy Barnett. And so we do 3 days at Roy Barnett, workshopping, working with students a bit and doing this performance. And then we're going to fly over to McGill University and do the whole thing there again.
Cool.
Yeah.
So we are at the, we're sort of at the final stages of this project. Mm-hmm. We're at final presentation. Can you talk a little bit about this immersive space that you recorded it in and like how it translates to the live performance?
Yeah. So, you know, immersive audio is like totally on trend right now. Like we hear it a lot. It's like, if you think, Dolby Atmos, when you go to a movie theater, you have this kind of 12 channel surround sound. It's like a level up from your like 5.1, which is, you know, a 6 channel system. So it's
okay.
Dolby is kind of the industry standard for movie and audio. So it's like a very hi-fi. So it's often used as sort of like a spatial enhancement to sort of records can be remixed for this platform. And now like, you know, Apple's AirPods and kind of new consumer based listening products like have the capacity to replicate this sort of immersive sound. So we're coming at it from like an artistic angle where we wanted to ask like, hey, how can we, rather than just like enhancing a mix that you have, how can we like compose music to and use these immersive systems that kind of replicate three-dimensional sound the way like our ears hear it? How can we compose for that, and how can we use it as an expressive medium?
Mm.
So that's been sort of the premise. And so the mandate in terms of the materials we've been writing is to each piece needed to be sort of conceptually different. We didn't want to repeat ideas in every piece because we really wanted to take that kind of hard research angle of like, let's just like really push maybe the expressive boundaries of the ways that these systems have been used. And so, yeah, we've come up with some really, I think, really cool conceptual works and spicing it up with like this live, this kind of live in studio human interactive aspect.
Spontaneity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You spent, if I recall, you said you spent 2 weeks composing in the space.
Mm-hmm.
So talking about that, was that, what was that process like? Was Eugene collaborating on that at the time, or was that just you and Will?
It's just been me and Will primarily. Okay. Eugene's coming in kind of, he's what we call the X factor.
Okay.
So we've given him very little preparation because we want to, we're very much into this like don't prepare too much because you need to have that je ne sais quoi about it. So we're kind of throwing him into it all when he gets here in a few days and having his interplay and his reactivity to this be sort of be part of the later stage of the composition. But in terms of the, like composing, like a lot of it, you know, my basis as a composer is, yeah, I have like a jazz and an orchestral background, but I really compositionally come from more of like a hip-hop kind of Ableton Live kind of production, kind of sample-based music. Yeah. And that's more funky and kind of...
groovy.
Accessible, ambient. Yeah, groovy kind of stuff. Which I would say typically of like electroacoustic music, as we might call it, where a lot of this immersive technology is sort of used as like kind of very esoteric, arty, kind of abstract, avant-garde kind of contemporary writing. So in this sense, this piece is unique. This concert is unique in that it pulls from a lot more kind of these colloquial hip hop and funky references and stuff. So it's an interesting way to approach that music.
Great. So when you were in this 2-week composition stage, tell us what like a typical day was like for you and Will during that time?
Yeah. So I would say we'd show up. It was like a 10 a.m. call.
Kay.
Okay. Generally about 5 hour sessions.
Kay.
Okay. So we roll in. Often we had to like kind of reset up the system a bit because there's it's a kind of a shared space. So we get all the speakers going, do a little level test. And depending on what we're working on. So I would often have basically some tracks that I've worked on at home.
Okay.
And I've kind of parsed those these tracks into about 12 separate tracks to sort of, so Will can very easily spatialize these little elements.
Okay.
And so we sit, one of us sits in the center of the room and Will's usually, you know, at the helm of the computer arranging things. And we sort of sit and he places things kind of in this three-dimensional space. And we kind of use our ears and our negotiating skills to like figure out where we want things to be. Because that's the really interesting thing about this is you're kind of you have horizontal and vertical planes of music. You have two levels of speakers all around you, back to front, and you kind of have to know where to direct. Hey, you have this little like cymbal hit, or you have like a piano sample, and you kind of we're kind of moving it around the room into the place we want. And then there's this whole aspect of, you know, the how you get to dress it. So Will is really, an expert in 3D audio. And so he's creating what we call multi-channel reverbs. So reverbs that, or delays that kind of are able to utilize the full 3D spectrum. So where, the delay is kind of moving
Traveling around.
In different ways, in different manners.
Fascinating. Yeah. So if I'm understanding you, it sounds like this time in that space was really more about mixing. Like, were you performing instruments and capturing that at the same time?
At times it is instrumental, but this is where things start to sort of, the idea of mixing as being a post-compositional tool becomes, it's actually not. It's because it's the, you have to apply this two-dimensional musical idea to a three-dimensional idea. So it's actually should be considered.
It's constructive.
It's constructive. It's compositional in itself. Yeah. So.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So you got to spend 2 weeks in this fabulous space and now you are bringing it to the hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the hall, as you said, has a compatible system.
Yep.
Are you anticipating anything, any complications from like bringing it over to the new space? How much time do you get to set it up?
We have 2 days. To set up,
to
test, and to really workshop it with the drummer. So it's everything's
with
happening.
Eugene, right?
So it's happening all very quick.
Right.
And there's definitely going to be variables and things we can't predict. Like I can say just from a very like physical objective standpoint, like the studio we're working in is like a bone dry recording studio.
Yeah.
And so here we're moving into a recital hall, which has its own natural, 1.5 seconds of reverb or something like that. So,
So
there's this, that's like a layer that we haven't had to deal with. And there's also, if you think just the way the recital hall is, it's like, it's got a ground level stage, a gradient seating. And so those horizontal and vertical planes from a listening standpoint are not actually straight across. So depending on where you're sitting in the hall, you're going to be hearing or maybe missing out on certain areas of the frequency. So that's kind of some of the things to consider. But yeah, there's always going to be, it's going to be a bit of a wild ride once we get in there.
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Eugene a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. So you met Eugene through Will.
Mm-hmm.
Eugene started playing, caught your attention.
Yeah.
From there, like, How did your relationship with Eugene evolve from that moment? Like, did you immediately know that this was someone you had to collaborate with, or like, how did it go from there?
Yeah, in so many ways, it was like that. It was just like me and Will have, we've known each other for so long. We just knew like this kid's got something that we like. He's got this beautiful energy, and he just can really move around the drum kit in a really amazing way. And it's also this element of like wanting to like create this opportunity and be able to mentor like a young musician. And and so I know he's going to have the time of his life out here. We're stoked to have him. And Yeah, I think he just stylistically has something that we really really like. And, you know, Will and I are huge fans of fusion music, and I don't know if you know, but like Japan is kind of always held on to the love of 70s fusion. And it has its own very strong, even city pop, these kind of genres that are now kind of coming into the North American kind of ethos, have just been going strong since the 70s and 80s right through. So there's just something about the time feel that Eugene has. And and we're stoked to have that as part of this project.
I mean, I imagine, you know, you're a seasoned performer. It's pretty rare to just hear someone sound check and have that kind of reaction.
Mm.
Like, I don't imagine it's happened that often in your life.
Mm.
But you said it was just something about his time feel. It was just something?
Yeah, yeah.
That grabbed you both?
Definitely, yeah.
So from that point on until you submitted the grant, how much time passed between there? Like,
it was about a year.
Did you get to do anything with Eugene in the middle?
No.
I guess, because you just met him on that trip, right?
Yeah, I hung out with him for one day.
Yeah, for one day.
For one day.
And he's inbound. He's coming our way for the performance.
Yes.
He arrives in the first week of November, you said?
November 4th, yeah. He's going to fly in. Yeah.
And then you're taking it to McGill. What, mm-hmm. What's waiting for you in McGill? Do you know what space you're going to be performing there?
Yeah, so we're going to be working in the MMR studio, which is this really big orchestra-sized room, which is really the best facility in Canada for realizing this kind of music. And so we're going to spend 2 days there doing a 3D recording. Okay, so this is where it's like the next layer. So there's the spatialized mix of the music, which is done in 3D, and then Will's sort of specialty is as a 3D recording engineer. So you're actually setting up mic arrays in a way that are meant to emulate the experience of being in the room.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, so we're going to record a 3D album.
Yeah.
And release it in that format in some very specialized Bandcamp. We're also going to make a regular stereo mix of it as well. But so we're going to do, we're spending 2 days recording all of these tracks there.
Yeah.
And then we're going to do another concert.
To capture it.
Yeah.
So if we zoom way into the future, once you release the product, the final 3D concert.
Mm.
For an average music consumer, do they need special equipment to listen to it properly?
Yeah, I mean, you need to have like these AirPod 2s.
Okay.
You know, so the latest kind of the latest generation of AirPods and audio headsets and that kind of thing will have some way of playing an Atmos mix. It'll be mixed for Dolby Atmos.
Okay.
And so I think it's called a binaural mix.
A binaural
mix. It's like the official term. I'm definitely not the expert in like knowing what all this means, but so for that immersive mix, you would need some sort of special AirPod to play it. But it is sort of accessible to the common people. But you'll also be able to just have what we would call a flattened. We're going to flatten the 3D mix into stereo. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
this is like a world of recorded audio. I really know nothing about this, the spatial binaural stuff. I have been to one concert, I did go to one headphone show that sort of had binaural mixes going, which is a really cool experience. But it's really cool to hear about the entire process of building something like this and creating it. So we have some recorded music to listen to today. You brought your iwi. We're going to hear some of that. Should we throw to some music of some kind?
Yeah, sure. Why don't we throw on? I'll show you the sort of track that started it all. This is with Eugene in Tokyo. We spent this day recording a track called Dry Ice.
Cool.
Dry Ice. Is just a very pure iwi fusion track. So
before we go to it,
mm-hmm.
we've said the word iwi
four
or five times so far, but I imagine a lot of folks at home listening may not know what an iwi is.
Yeah, an iwi is it's an acronym for electric wind instrument.
Oh, it is?
Okay, so it's made by Akai. It's been around since the late 70s. It's an electric wind synthesizer. So it's a synthesizer like one you would see, you know, in all your favorite bands, but it's controlled with the breath, and so it has sort of an interesting sort of dynamic way of playing because the breath triggers sort of the volume or some of these synthesizer characteristics.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I didn't know it was an acronym.
There you go.
Okay. Well, here is Dry Ice on CITR 101.9 FM. Hope you enjoy. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail.
On November 9th, celebrated Vancouver clarinetist and composer Sam Davidson brings Unrealistic Spaces to the Roy Barnett Recital Hall.
This collaboration with UBC's Institute for Computing, Information, and Cognitive Systems also features drummer, percussionist, and composer Eugene Honda and producer Will Howey. Consisting of 8 venue-specific compositions, Unrealistic Spaces places performers within unique 3D sound spaces layered with complex acoustics and ambiences that range from picture-perfect immersive field recordings to completely artificial, hyper-real sonic environments. Don't miss your chance to be part of this immersive musical experience on November 9th at 2 p.m. at the Roy Barnett Recital Hall here at the University of British Columbia. Tickets are $25, but use the promo code CITR to get 50% off. To get your tickets, head to eventbrite.ca, search for Unrealistic Spaces, and use the promo code CITR to get 50% off now.
Looking for the perfect night out? UBC Fashion Club is bringing the ultimate throwback party to Beaumont Studios on Thursday, December 7th.
Indie Sleaze Night!
A 19-plus rave from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. What's Indie Sleaze? It's a time machine to the wild Tumblr and MySpace days, when messy eyeliner, thrifted graphic tees, and pure, unfiltered fun ruled the scene.
We've got a killer DJ lineup featuring DJ Trustworthy, Leo, Nick, and DJ Crown Jewel, spinning a variety of styles all night long.
And the dress code? Anything goes. Skinny jeans, bleached roots, vintage jackets, bring your best Indie Sleaze energy and show us what you've got. Tickets are selling fast, so hit the link in our Instagram bio at FashionClubUBC now to grab yours. Indie Sleaze Night, happening Thursday, December 7th at Beaumont Studios from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Get ready to party like it's 2012. Don't miss it.
Hey, folks, you're back on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory at the University of British Columbia. My name's Jasper. I'm hanging out with my friend Sam Davidson. If you're just joining us, Sam is here to talk about his latest project, Unrealistic Spaces, which comes to UBC on November 9th. It's a matinee show at 2 p.m. The show is at the Roy Barnett Recital Hall at the UBC School of Music. Tickets are $25, but if you use the promo code CITR, you can get 50% off. And if you want to get your tickets, head to eventbrite.ca and punch Unrealistic Spaces into the search bar, and it should come up rather hastily. So we've been talking about many aspects of this project over the last year, because it's been, you know, a year in the making, mm-hmm. I'd say. I wanted to ask you about getting a project like this off the ground and fund it. Because it's, you know, you pitched it to the Canada Council, but it involves the University of British Columbia, it involves McGill University, and it involves collaborators in Japan, so there's a lot of moving parts. And, you know, I think we see a lot of folks come through CITR who are interested in, you know, well, a lot of folks come through CITR are interested in, like, pursuing creative endeavors, and often that involves getting funding. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about how you made this happen? Like, what? How did you pitch this to the Canada Council in a way that, you know, a grant officer would understand and want to fund?
Yeah, you know, grant writing.
Sure.
I'll say, having sat been someone who's written grants and someone who's maybe been on a few panels to adjudicate grants, I'd say, like, what I knew that me and Will had with this project is we had a great story. And I think a story being able to sell your project as a story to whomever will be reading it. And now it's important to know that when you submit something to Factor or Canada Council or whatever arts agency you're submitting to, these are just regular arts people, you know. It could be your neighbor, your friend. It's just,
yeah.
It's really just like
people.
They're just people. And so, you know, people just want to, they love an interesting story. You gotta like really say something captivating. And so, you know, I think the trip to Japan, I kind of leaned on just the story of just going to whimsically going to Tokyo and putting on these two shows and kind of just seeing what would happen. And then, you know, discovering this whole new world of music to explore and kind of creating this idea of excitement. I think that is worth a lot in sort of trying to pitch your project.
Yeah.
So that's like one aspect of it. I'd say like, what's the story behind it? People just want to know, you know, you want to get people excited. Secondly, you know, you need to like back up the story and you need to back up the project with something, some concrete dates, like a really good solid plan. Like you've really thought things through.
Okay.
And so, you know, the good fortune of this project is that Will has worked at UBC and worked at McGill in the capacities as doing his PhDs and degrees and stuff like that. So it's kind of like, who do you know who can throw you that bone of writing you an invitation letter for the grant?
Right.
Right. And so when you have that letterhead, I think that helps.
It helps.
From McGill School of Music saying, yeah, we would love to have this project. We'll host it. We'll, offer this much in-kind support being in-kind. Like, hey, we would normally bill X amount of dollars for use of this space. We'll give it at a rate of 50% for right. this project. So right. you have some numbers, you have an invitation letter. So these things kind of bolster the way your project is looked and perceived, even if these things are sort of like these things always change down the line. And I think that's okay as well as knowing that you're going to have this tentative plan that you've just massaged as much as you can. You write this budget that is balanced, where, you know, your revenues equal your expenses.
Yeah.
It's a zero. It's always zero.
Yeah.
And you just try to do your due diligence in making sure that it's clear, have a friend look over it. You know, if you do those three things, you know, you at least have a chance. Now, the thing with submitting to a grant agency is that there's only so much money to go around. So even so, as much as you do an amazing application, the way they score, you know, through these adjudicatory processes is sometimes you just don't make the top 10 or the
yeah.
top 15,
whatever the
in terms of the grading. And so it is really, it's a lot of luck, you know, so we got lucky.
Sure.
Yeah.
There is a lot of luck, but those three things being strong narrative,
mm-hmm.
balanced budget.
Yes.
And then, you know, some kind of anchor in reality.
Yeah.
Like letters from people, collaborators that want to support you.
Absolutely.
I think when we started this hour, you used the word lofty when you described the grant. And then just now you were talking about how things change over time.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how this project changed over time from the lofty beginnings to where you are now.
Yeah, I guess lofty, I mean, I guess it was in the dream big, like,
yeah,
let's fly this guy in from Japan. And
yeah.
Let's just, we'll do a 3D recording at McGill and we'll do a show at UBC and, you know, we'll,
yeah.
you know, this, we didn't even know how we could factor it into our own busy lives. You know, I have a day job, Will's got
sure.
a day job, so it's scary. But yeah, the things that change, well, I think things emerge. Is right things
yeah.
things emerge you start to realize like oh yeah I need to get a drum kit for this day and oh I need to have like there's kind of bureaucratic processes that you have to go through to like
bring in a collaborator
there's the whole of the tax scenarios of right. you know paying a foreign musician and the whole thing of visas that's one logistical thing you know keeping your budget on track with like flight price changes and
yeah.
just all these little things you don't plan for. And even just, I think for us, the big lesson is that there's so much more administrative time, that we didn't account for, you know? And I think that's like, that's probably always the case. And so I think my learning lesson is in terms of like, is sort of like bolstering that in terms of a budget, is saying like, you know, these grants are there to pay yourself fairly for the work you're doing. That's like the, that's the whole reason of the Canada Council to be. And so,
yeah,
it's just, yeah, being really realistic with yourself and knowing that being realistic on a grant is, will probably serve you well in the end and not score against you. So I found myself kind of really kind of like, be so frugal about
paying yourself,
paying myself. Yeah. And so, yeah, it just, it's good to do because you don't want to be asking for too much, but it's a lot of work. Yeah.
I totally hear you. When when we build these grants, we do dream big and we really assign a lot of the budget to all of the fun, exciting, creative stuff. And then during the course of delivery, we find ourselves doing a lot more of that invisible labor that it requires to make things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a good lesson to learn. It's a good nugget of wisdom for anyone listening who's, you know, getting involved in the grant submission process, which is a reality for, you know, basically all working artists in Canada.
Totally.
Well, how about creatively? How did the project, like, how did the art and the music change for you? From, did you have a vision of what it would be when you wrote the grant versus what it is now?
Yeah, you know, initially we were going to re-record something we had already done before, but in an immersive space.
Okay.
And, but it came to be that we were like, oh, but it didn't have a part for drums. And right. So it was like, well, how can we justify flying in this artist from Japan and like not utilizing him for, you know, half of the concert? So sure. It was kind of like, okay, well, this has got to go. But there's these elements. It's like, there's a lot of like the battle of the ego in any artistic project. It's like, I think that's been like one of the big hurdles is you get attached to these ideas that you want it to be. And I think me and Will were always floating around like, oh, I want to do this. And we have these visions. And then slowly over time, like you just have to reckon with the truth of some of these ideas that, hey, they're not going to work.
They're not going to make it.
And so, yeah, even just this weekend, we were doing our last couple sessions. And,
yeah.
You know, and I remember Will saying to me, he's like, there's something, I have an idea, but something we have to get rid of. And I want to run it first to make sure it's true. And it was definitely like, you know, we did it and it's something that you're attached to and you're trying to make it work, but you just have to go, this just doesn't work.
Was Will right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those conversations can be really hard though in the studio.
Yeah, true. It's true. Yeah. I think it's important just to like, you got to just keep an arm's distance from being attached to music because to the music you're making, I think, because what am I trying to say here? At the end, it's all going to be music.
Yes.
So you shouldn't necessarily get too attached to this single idea of the music because at the end, it's still going to be some beautiful music that you made. I don't know. Do you kind of get what I'm saying?
I do get what you're saying. And I think that speaks to the importance of collaborative relationships, you know, to have that person like Will to provide the perspective that Sam might be lacking about,
absolutely,
you know, this micro aspect of a composition. I, you know, anecdotally, I rely on people in my life to tell me those things about music we're trying to make and stuff. So I totally get it. So, Sam, we got about 9 minutes left together. I know we want to get to the Iwi performance. Should we jump to that so we can make sure we fit it all in?
Yeah.
So for everyone listening at home, here in studio, we have Sam wired into the board here with his Iwi. Do you want to talk a little bit about what we're going to hear?
Yeah, I'm going to play some Iwi for you.
Cool.
I'll be honest and say I'm pretty much improvising right now.
Love
I'm
it.
Not sure what I'm going to do, but it's part of my thing is to just do that to myself. So I don't know.
Well, I want to describe the Iwi for anyone who's never seen one. So Sam is holding a plastic electronic wind instrument. It's about 2.5 feet long. It's got a bunch of buttons. I mean, the buttons and things resemble a clarinet, but and there's rollers on the bottom too. It's plugged. It has all kinds of patchable capability. It's controlled by Sam's breath, and it sounds pretty glorious. You heard it in the recording we played earlier, but I guess now you're going to hear Sam improvise. So let me just make sure you're on. Okay. We'll give it a little test blow, maybe. See if our levels are okay. Oh, yeah. We're good. So, Sam, maybe I'll just turn off our microphones and let you blow away for a little while. And
sounds good.
Okay, here we go. That was Sam Davidson playing the iwi live here in studio at CITR 101.9 FM. That sounded gorgeous.
Thank you.
I have so many questions about the iwi now. you know, I don't want to nerd out on the iwi. I do have a lot of questions. We only have about 2 minutes left, though, so we don't have time to get into them. But that was so immersive and rich. I guess if I could ask just one question, I could see you have a little reverb pedal plugged in, but like, I mean, the iwi, I heard an incredible range, first of all, of like bass to treble.
Yeah.
Is that range broader than any like real wind instrument can provide?
Definitely. Yeah. You got a full 8 octaves, like a piano on this.
You have a full piano?
Yeah. Wow. It's each one of these rollers.
Okay. Okay. And then you know, when you're hearing, for me, when I'm hearing an instrument, you can always kind of tell like what the sort of bass tone of an instrument is, you know. But with the iwi, it's a synthesizer. Mm-hmm. I get that. But like, would you say the iwi has like a sort of bass sound, or is it kind of like an oscillator that has like a range of bass?
Yeah, it's two oscillators.
It's two oscillators?
Yeah.
Right.
So you can, you know, you can create any sound you want, really.
By messing with the filters.
Tweaking the knobs, yeah.
So in addition to playing the notes that you would play on like a wind instrument, you also have to manage the oscillators and the filters.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Which, I mean...
That's done... There's all the circuitry in here.
Okay.
It's like a what you call a digital analog modeled kind of synth.
Okay.
And so it syncs with a piece of software that's actually from 2007. So I have retained an old computer to operate this totally old, squirrely soft synth. And so yeah, I go in and I can tweak. So it looks like it's got an interface like a typical synthesizer with knobs and stuff, like you'd see in a DAW or something like that.
Yes.
And so, yeah, you just tweak away and then you just, you know, save your set and just push it into the instrument.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can go in there and rejig the oscillators, but you need a computer to do that.
Yeah.
I guess it'd be too much to manage, though. Maybe you could use expression pedals with your feet or something like that at some point.
You can, but this will store up to 100 different. This stores
presets?
100 sounds. Yeah.
Oh.
So I can just toggle between
your
the
presets.
Ones that I want. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, Sam. We're coming up on time here,
awesome.
But what a treat to have you come to the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you're listening at home, you can catch Sam live here on campus on November 9th. He's bringing Unrealistic Spaces to the Roy Barnett Recital Hall at the UBC School of Music. Tickets are $25, but if you use the promo code CITR, you can get 50% off. You head to Eventbrite, search for Unrealistic Spaces, and you can get yourself some tickets for the November 9th show.
Right on.
Sam, thanks for popping by. Thanks for listening, everybody at home. We will see you next time.